Live from the Ghost Hunter Store, brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Dave, I'm just going to be on the sidelines this show. We've got a whole crowd of people that want to talk to our guest this week, Bill Bean. Marty's here, Keith, Wendy, Sharon, and Taryn. So I'm going to step off and let them take over. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Great, Dave. Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor and a pleasure being on with you. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Bill.
It's great to finally get on here, and we made it through the little technical difficulties in the beginning, but I hope that everyone out there, including you guys, had a great Thanksgiving.
Yes, you too.
Definitely, we did. Yeah, and we always have technical difficulties here. Paranormal Straight Talk, and at least this one was only for 5 minutes, so we're doing good tonight.
Good, praise God. We don't want any technical difficulties at all. We want to have a smooth interview here, and certainly, hopefully, there will be someone out there that will receive a blessing from this, or, you know, and that's what everything's about for me now, is just trying to help other people. So I always pray that God helps me to be a blessing to somebody.
Well, that's basically what it is one, that one person that listens to the show that says, hey, you know, I've been through that, or you know, I'm going through that now, and maybe somebody can help me. That's always
helpful. Absolutely. Yes.
Hey, Bill, this is Keith. Wendy and I got your book, and we both read it, and it was a great, great book. We got the Dark Horses.
Hi, Keith. Thank you so much for that. I thank both of you. I really appreciate it. And I'll be sending out your copy of Delivered on Monday afternoon.
That's great.
Looking forward to reading it.
Thank you both so much. I really appreciate it.
So we read the book, and then, you know, basically, I mean, every time I read it or read through it, it just seemed like there was always a little bit more into the story than, you know, what you wrote, because I think you just hit on, like, the main, you know, points of what happened, you know, over the years, and, I mean, it was a great read.
No, I thank you so much, yeah, and you're absolutely correct. I mean, I held back. I could have doubled the thickness of content, you know, for the book. But number one, it's very, very difficult to write because I had to sit down and relive those events again and put myself back in those situations. So that was very, very difficult. And, you know, and secondly, I didn't want to be redundant in listing event after event after event. You know, I made my point, and I tried to just bring the reader in. And, you know, I thank God for, you know, having it to go that way, because I've gotten so many reviews from people saying that they, you know, once they picked the book up, they couldn't put it down, and they felt like they were locked into the story, and it just, you know, and it's a very quick read.
Absolutely. It was a very easy read, and it did keep you locked into the story. But maybe for, like, some of our listeners who haven't heard your story, you could just give, like, a brief synopsis for them, a little bit about what happened to you.
Yeah, kind of what got you into all this.
Absolutely. You know, I say in Dark Force, and again, I've written two books. The first is Dark Force, the second is Delivered. And in Dark Force, I stated that it all began in 1970 when my family and I moved into a three-bedroom ranch-style home located in Glenbury, Maryland, in a community called Herondale. But it really goes much further back. I'd learned additional information after writing Dark Force that from a family member that it is quite possible that a family member on my mother's side of the family many, many years ago did something to actually conjure these evil forces. And I think they came upon the family and really greatly contributed to many untimely deaths and many tragic things and just many horrible things. And I think that dark force actually led us to the house where evil was already present and manifest. And I have reasons for saying that, and I'll certainly get into it a little bit as we progress into the interview. But so I've often said that's why it was so severe for us, that we were caught in between a this two-pronged attack from evil, and it greatly contributed to the destruction of my family. I had very little family left, and I wish that I could go back and change these things. Absolutely, I wish that I could. I wish I could step back in time, and if I knew then what I know now, I'd absolutely be able to change it. But I can't. It's gone, and the only thing I could do is move forward and try to be the best that I can be. In doing that, saying that, it's all about reaching out to help other people who are, you know, currently experiencing problems. But going back then, my mom was the first to have an experience, and it took place shortly after we moved in. And she was in a living room unpacking and organizing, and my dad had taken us, have an older sister and younger brother. He had taken us with him for the day to his parents' house to allow my mother what she felt would be peace and quiet, you know, while she was doing this process. And it was in the course of that where she felt a presence, and she thought in her mind it was my dad sneaking back into the house to play a joke on her. And she spun around, you know, fully anticipating on seeing him, and to her shock, you know, nothing was there. And she was quite unnerved by it, and eventually able to go back to doing what she was doing. And it wasn't long after that, one of the bedroom doors had slammed shut by itself, and that was enough to make her go outside and wait until we returned. So that's where it all began, with the feeling of presence and, a door slamming and other noises, and it gradually escalated into violent physical attacks on us from these demonic entities.
Hey, Bill, this is Sharon. What made you think to go back and do research into the family to find out that additional information that you think that a member of the family may have somehow conjured these forces? What made you think that it was something more than just bad luck moving into that house?
Well, I knew, because I found I was given some old family photographs after my mother had passed. And it wasn't long after leaving that house in 1980 that two tragedies took place, and that was the sudden passing of my grandmother, and then 2 months and 2 days later, my mother, Patricia Bean, died from a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 44. So I have no doubt that these demonic forces had a hand in both of those deaths. And so my sister had gotten my mother's old family photographs, and in 2005, my wife and I were at her house, Christmas 2005, and she asked me if I wanted some of the old family photos that had belonged to my mother, and I did take some and got them home and looked through them. And, you know, again, my life has been filled with paranormal, supernatural activity. These things continued into my life until 2008, and that was after my wife and I had gotten baptized, and then it all stopped. But it was in the course of looking through these photos that I discovered some very disturbing, anomalous images in some of these photographs. And one was taken in 1968. I was 2, and my sister was 11. And we are seated behind our toy piano, Christmas time, 1968. And to her far left in the photograph is this very large black hooded figure. And it looks to be about 7 feet tall, and it's, you know, gigantic. And then I found many other photos with disturbing anomalies in them as well. So upon seeing this and discovering this, it certainly led me to believe that, you know, these things were taking place long before moving into the house. So then I had a discussion with a family member, and a lot of the older family members, and there's not much family left, but a few are older, and they really didn't want to talk about it, and really they didn't want to delve into it, and they just didn't want to go there. And but it was after talking with him that he had told me that they too, you know, my mother and her siblings in their childhood years also had endured paranormal supernatural activity, and their family had moved around quite a bit as children. And at one point, my mother actually had lived in that very area near the house. And so she had exposure to the area you know, before we ever moved into to that house in 1970. So it certainly made perfect sense to me that these things were taking place, you know, long before moving in. That said, the area has had many bizarre supernatural things take place over the years. For such a small community, so, back in that time, I don't know what it's like now, but back in that time, it was an abnormally high crime rate, violent crimes, murders, many bizarre things were taking place, and coupled with the paranormal supernatural aspect, you know, many of the homes were having problems, and I still get messages from people to this very day in that area that are still having paranormal supernatural activity in their homes and among their family. And about a year and a half ago, I actually went back to the area, which I very seldom, you know, go to the area anymore. I don't even live close to the area. And but I went back on behalf of a family in need, and I performed a deliverance house blessing and cleansing. And I was not fond of going back into the area, but again, my life is about helping people, so I did go back and just had that same feeling. You know, every once in a great while, I'll have to go through the area, and you can pass by the house from a highway, and you can look down from the highway and see the house, which is located at the bottom of a downhill cul-de-sac, and, you know, just looking down and get the same feeling, you know, the same awful, terrible, heavy feeling that I had all those years ago. So there's no question that there are things still taking place in the area. The house itself has changed hands many times over the years, and I heard that it had just sold again. So, again, I don't know who is living there. I can tell you this, that after I had written Delivered, it was actually after the Discovery Channel show aired, which, as you know, the Discovery Channel, you know, featured my story, and it's called House of the Dead, right, on the A Haunting mm-hmm. series. And after that aired, I was contacted by a young man who was watching the show. His name was Edward Harden. And he said as he was watching, he just knew that it was the house that he and his family had lived in.
Oh, wow.
And he compelled to contact me. And, you know, they too had suffered many bizarre supernatural paranormal experiences while living in the house. I believe they lived there from 1991 to 1994. And he shared some stories with me. They were not physically attacked like my family and I were. However, they did have, you know, many unexplainable, bizarre experiences that took place. And I actually did an interview with Edward, you know, for my book, my second book, Delivered. So it is amazing how someone came forward to corroborate, you know, what was said with my story in Dark Force.
Now, sir, were some of his experiences similar to, I mean, I understand it wasn't anything physical, but were they similar to what happened to you and your family? I mean, as far
some of the things he said, yeah, absolutely. You know, talking about the foul odors and the noises and the way the house was laid out. Again, the house is located at the bottom of a downhill cul-de-sac, and there's a very long and deep ravine behind the house. And you would walk through the front door, and from the very beginning, the house, you know, I was four when we moved in, so the house had a very ominous-looking feel about it. It was semi-dilapidated, and my dad was a master carpenter, so he saw it as a restoration project, which he did a great deal of work. You know, it was a great deal of work that he had done to make the house look good, you know, presentable. And you would walk in through the front door into the living room, and the house was equally foreboding on the inside, because the walls had like this dark brown paneling, almost black. I mean, very little light ever came into the house. It was dark all the time. And you would walk into the living room, and you would make a right down a long hallway. And the hallway had a hard tile floor. And I shared a room with my brother. Again, I was four. My brother was one. It was the first room on the right. My parents' room was the second on the right, and then my sister's room. They called the back bedroom. That was the last room on the left. And that is also the room that remained cold even on the hottest of summer days. You know, that room was cold. And that's also the room where the door would open and slam for many repetitions at a time. And, you know, my sister was the first to have a physical encounter. And that took place in late 1970. And it happened while she was in bed, in her bed asleep, late at night. Something woke her from her sleep. And she couldn't see anyone or anything there. She got frightened. She was going to get my parents. And as she was going to get out of bed to get them, something grabbed her leg. And she let out a loud scream that woke my parents up. They came running into the room, flipped the switch on, you know, the light, turned the light on. And they didn't see anything there. However, they did, you know, find my sister very traumatized. And they did see marks on her leg where she said something had grabbed her leg. So my sister never again felt comfortable in the house. She said she always felt like she was being followed and watched. And it wouldn't be long for her that she'd end up running away in the middle of the night and married a young man in the neighborhood just to get out of there. And, you know, back to Edward Hardin and his family, Edward told me that one instance, his mom had gone into the bathroom, the door was not locked, and when she tried to come back out, she couldn't get the door open. It was like something was, you know, holding the door to where she couldn't get it open. And so she pulled and pulled and pulled on the door to try and get it open and get out, and she couldn't, and she panicked, and she began to yell and scream, and Edward and his brother came down and tried to get it open. They couldn't get it open, and the brother ran and got an axe, and they literally took an axe to the door to get it down, to get the mother out. And another story that he told me was that their mom did not like guns, and she didn't want guns in the house. And Ed and his brother had, you know, hunting rifles. And he said the only way that she would allow them to bring the weapons in the house would be if they disassembled them. So that's exactly what they would do. They would disassemble the weapons and they would bring them in. And interestingly enough, Ed and his brother shared the same room that my brother and I had shared, you know, previously. And they would put the weapons in the closet, disassemble, and wake up the next morning to find each rifle reassembled.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
That's frightening, though.
Bill, this is Taryn. I just have a question.
Sure.
When all the stuff started with Mom, she never had mentioned when everything started, like with your dad and you guys experienced and everything. She had never said that maybe stuff had happened to her and her family in the past.
So this was prior to us moving in?
Yeah.
Well, when you moved in, you said that that's when stuff started with, you know, Mom had started, you know, experiencing stuff in the house.
She was the first to have an experience in the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no, to my knowledge, and again, I was four when we moved in, and you know, I don't recall her ever. If she did, I didn't hear her say, you know, about her having, you know, supernatural experiences in her childhood. Now, there were only two people that she confided in throughout this whole time, and that was my grandmother, her mom, Dora Harvey, and her sister, Joyce Hall. You know, these were the two confidants that she had. And actually, I'll say a third. It was a lady by the name of Mrs. Davis. She lived up on the top of the street. And my mother would literally, there were times where she would have to run out of the house and go to Mrs. Davis's house until my brother and I got home from school. I mean, there would be times that we never got proper rest in the house. You know, we were just under constant pressure. On edge all the time. These events would take place, you know, they were rampant. It would happen daytime, nighttime. There were no set times or patterns for these things to happen. So we were always on edge. The mental aspect and the mental abuse that we suffered was far greater than any of the physical abuse, because it was just a a constant strain, a constant pressure and tension. And, you know, again, we did not get proper rest, and there would be days that, and my brother and I missed a lot of school as children. I began to suffer the physical attacks, and it began in 1971 and carried on over the years, throughout the years. And after each one of those physical attacks, I would feel like I had the flu. You know, I'd have the body aches and the sore throat and the fever. I had many fevers as a child, so therefore I missed a lot of school, and my brother as well. And if there were days that my brother and I did go to school and my mom would be alone in the house, there were times that she would try and lay down on the sofa just to try and take a nap. And there were several instances in where an unseen force would actually levitate the sofa with my mother on it, and she would have to jump off of that sofa and run out of the house to Mrs. Davis's house until we got up for school. And this is the kind of torment and trauma that we were sustaining on a regular basis for over 10 years.
It's a deep depression.
Yeah, and I mean, do you believe or feel now, knowing everything that you've known and found out, two things. One, do you believe that this these entities or whatever you will want to call that were in the house, do you believe that they played a role in Mom not wanting to leave the house despite all of the trauma that you guys were going through?
Oh, absolutely. You know, each and every one of us had come under demonic oppression at various times of living there. You know, it all began with my dad, who was a great man, someone I looked up to as a heroic type of figure, someone I very much wanted to be like. He was blessed with every physical attribute necessary to be highly successful in life. And his story alone is just very sad and tragic, the way, you know, his life ended. And my...
Bill?
Happy childhood memories.
We lost you for a second. Sorry, Bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about my dad.
Right.
My dad. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes. Sorry about that.
That's okay. My dad was a great man. He was someone that was blessed with every physical attribute necessary to be highly successful in life. His story in itself is very sad and tragic, you know, especially the way his life ended. And, he's someone that I looked up to and someone I very much wanted to be like. And my parents were social drinkers. They loved to have family over and have gatherings, and they loved the steamed crabs and all that kind of stuff. And they were married in 56. My sister was born in 57. And by all accounts, you know, they were happy. And but things began to rapidly change after moving into the house in 1970. My dad's character and demeanor began to rapidly change, and I think he was the first to come under spiritual attack. He never relayed this to us, but he did confide in my mom's mom, and that he was seeing apparitions and manifestations. So I have no doubt that he was under spiritual attack, and I think it just pushed him over the edge, because he was a man's man. He was used to being in control of every situation. And this was something that he didn't have any control over and didn't know what to do, really, on how to deal with this. So I think it really he was the first attributed to him attack. He was delving into it. He never relayed this to us, but he did confide.
Sorry, we're having some feedback on the other line there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay. I thought you wanted to ask me a question. I was trying to figure out what was being said.
Now... Have you and Chris Lutz have ever had a conversation?
Oh yeah, Chris reached out to me a couple years ago, and out of the blue, you know, I knew who he was. I was familiar with the story, and I guess he found me somehow and reached out to me, and we're very good friends. And we appeared together last year in Gettysburg at the Phenomenology 104 event.
Yes,
and
I
haven't
awesome.
Talked with him in a while, but he's a good guy, and he suffered a lot of trauma as well.
Right. Yeah, I was there for, I was there last year and the year before. And
oh, okay.
Yes, I love phenomenology. But I heard his story.
I look forward to it again.
Yes. I asked that only because, you know, it seems when I was talking to Chris, you know, that, I mean, you both, I don't know if they aren't exact, you know, but they have a lot of similarities, you know, and my heart goes out to him. He's like struggle, you know, he seems like he's still struggling with it.
Yeah, he's very, he's a good man and, yes. Very deep, you know, he's very, very deep individual and, we've had some talks, and he knows that I've certainly, anything I could ever do to help him in any way, absolutely, I'll be there. You know, that's my life's work now. I'm a walking miracle because going through what I've gone through, being exposed to these things, my life could have been so different. You know, I shouldn't be here. And, you know, really, honestly, I've been, you know, my life could have went so bad and did go down those dark roads, and I just, you know, I have to thank God for guiding me out of that garbage, and my life is abundantly blessed now, and my life is all about helping other people, and it is just, there's no greater thing when you can come out of all this darkness and be on the other side of it and be in a position to help others out of the darkness. It's just a wonderful blessing.
Yeah, to be able to write about it and have people read, you know, to be able to sit down and read it in privacy, because a lot of people are still private about all this stuff, is amazing in itself. But you do a lot of other good work. I know the last time we were supposed to be on the radio, you were actually shooting off to do a deliverance or help a family out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, yeah, and it's amazing. You know, I've been contacted quite frequently by those who are in need of deliverance of prayer or even advice. But now, in the last several weeks, it has really increased. And I'm going to be going to Pennsylvania next Saturday to perform a deliverance up there, which the week before I was up there for another family. And it just keeps going. You know, I mean, people are just reaching out to me from all over the place. And again, I'm just grateful and thankful to be in the position that I'm in. And I'll tell you, I couldn't be where I'm at right now had I not experienced those things. So in a strange way, yes, I wish I could go back and change it, but then, you know, God does work in mysterious ways, and it was probably part of a preparation process for where I'm at right now in my life.
Amen to that.
Right. I truly, you know, I truly give that believe purpose. That we have to go through some of those hard times. I mean, unfortunately, they have to be so hard, but to get us where we're supposed to be in the long run. Yeah?
You and your family must have felt so alone and isolated during that time, like no one else in the world could possibly understand what we're going through. And now to find yourself helping those families that felt like you did must be extremely rewarding to be able to give that back.
It sure is, you know. And again, yeah, back then we didn't have anybody because my parents believed in God, but we didn't have any religious structure at all. You know, we were never baptized. We never attended church as children.
We were pretty much
isolated, you know, and again, going back to my dad, with his character abruptly changing, he had turned into a raging alcoholic who began to physically abuse my mother on a regular basis between 1973 and 1975. And he left us in 1975, thank God, because I'm convinced he would have killed my mother, you know, had he not left us. And when he left us in such a bad way, and I failed to mention that my mother was very ill the entire time we lived in the house. She had, she was suffering from high blood pressure, which led to strokes, which ultimately led to kidney failure. She suffered greatly. She suffered more than any other person I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, just her story and my dad's, just those two alone, you know, are so sad and tragic. And I wish that I could have gone back and changed the course of their lives. But, you know, there was a great deal of bloodshed, a great deal of suffering that took place there. And we were defeated mentally, spiritually, and physically, you know, in all aspects of our life to where we just lived in darkness. And when I, you know, this is the way I equate it. When people are under demonic oppression, you might as well be sitting in darkness and shackles and chains. And we certainly were that for quite a while. And when my dad left, again, he was not sending any money home. We had to go on welfare. And it was just awful, you know, just surviving on a daily basis. And we ended up losing the house. The house was auctioned off in the front yard. And the man that bought the house in the public auction knew my mother's circumstances and allowed us to stay there on a pay-as-you-can-when-you-can basis. And my grandmother wanted us to come stay with her, but she and my step-grandfather shared a one-bedroom apartment, and my mother was not going to burden them with us. And my aunt wanted us to come stay with her, but she had 8 children and a husband. And, you know, my mom was not to be a burden. And the X factor in it was the demonic oppression that came over each and every one of us at various times.
Exactly.
And I developed a burning hatred for my dad for many, many years for what, you know, for him leaving and what he had done to my mom and all of these things. But I'm so happy to tell you that I was able to let all that go and forgive him.
That's good.
Before his untimely death. You know, he was shot to death in 1987. And so I'm thankful that I was able to forgive him before his untimely death.
Now, you had said earlier that your sister wound up leaving the house when she was very, very young to escape this.
Yeah.
Did she continue to have experiences later after she had left the house? And was did she become a target after your mother's early death?
Well, I'll tell you this. She never mentioned anything, but I was told that she would always, like, check in the closets and check under her bed and things of that nature every night before
she
went to bed. And also, a very bizarre thing happened to her that nearly cost her her life. Now, she was born in 57. I was born in 1966, and my brother was born in 69. And in 63, there was a child. There was another child born. I never could get the exact story on this because different family members tell it differently. So there are versions, and I don't know what the true version is. All I do know is that there was a child born, supposedly a boy in 1963, and he died shortly thereafter. And Johns Hopkins came and removed the child and took the remains for study. Now, that's what I know without knowing exactly why. But then, so that would have been the first male child to my parents, that, you know, 1963.
Right.
So then my sister, which I believe it was 1979 or 1980, her first child, which would have been her first male child, ended up dying inside of her and poisoned her body, and she nearly died from it.
Wow.
They never explained to your family, or, well, to you, actually, about why Johns Hopkins came and took that child?
I could never get a straight answer, you know, and some family members, again, I have very little family left, but the ones that, you know, my aunt had passed a couple of years ago, and I asked her about it, and she just said she didn't want to talk about it anymore, and, you know, and I asked my uncle about it, and he really didn't want to talk about it either, so something happened there. And I don't know exactly what, but for Johns Hopkins to come and remove the remains for studies, it speaks volumes to me. So I wish there was some way I could find out exactly what happened, but
I
guess we'll never know.
Do you think Johns Hopkins would have?
I tried it, and they don't. They don't have the records that far back. I tried it.
You know, I also have to say, just going back a little bit, with growing up in the 70s and dealing with what your family had dealt with, you know, this whole paranormal field has become so more mainstream nowadays. Back then, it was taboo. So, you know, there
were... Very taboo.
Yes, and so there were not a lot of... There was, like, probably no help, you know? So I can't even imagine going through something like that back then and not being able to talk to anybody without somebody wanting to throw everybody in a straitjacket.
Well, that's what it was. It was mental illness back then. They didn't see it as anything else, but you have a mental issue.
But that's the thing is, like, nobody talked about it. Like Bill was saying, like, his mom and dad never really talked about it. The family didn't talk about it. There was nowhere to turn.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, again, you know, it was just like we were, and this is part of the strategy of demonic oppression and possession, things of this nature, is to divide and conquer. You know, together we're strong, divided we're weakened, and that's exactly what was taking place. And we did have, my step-grandfather was Catholic, you know, my family and I are not Catholic, but he was Catholic, and he went to his church, and they did send a priest out, and the priest was involved for the last 16 months that we lived there, and I thanked them very much for, you know, their involvement and participation and their willingness to try and help, but, you know, what had happened was the activity grew even more violent and more intense with the priest involvement. And, you know, after my dad left us in 75, my mother came under regular physical attack from two entities in particular to where she couldn't even sleep in her bed anymore. These things were coming to her bed and choking her. And my mother had bruises, cuts, and scratches on her long after my dad had left.
And you, when you were, I guess, 13, was it your uncle that actually, you know, talked to you and tried to help you face the demons in the house?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I have to tell you, I mean, like, that to me, I'm 34 years old, and I can't imagine having to stand up to that to protect my entire family, to try to help my family. I mean, at 13... I mean, you had to have been scared, but it just goes to show you that God was calling you back then, that, you know, you're a, you know, an angel or one of God's soldiers or however it is that you may see, you know, your uncle, and you actually did that with the strength of, it had to be a higher power for the good to be able to do something like that.
Yeah. Because while that was taking place, you know, there were five adults with me. I was 13 years old and there were five adults with me, and this had taken place after a visit to Florida. I visited my uncle. And, you know, even as a young child, I always had blind faith in God. I didn't know anything about God at all. Didn't know the Bible. I'd never read the Bible. You know, if I had, I just skimmed over it. Certainly didn't retain anything. And, but I always had this blind faith, you know, even from a young child, even though all these horrible things were happening, I always had that blind faith. And then when I had that meeting with my uncle in 1979, and he had empowered me because he shared information with me that we could take our authority over this garbage, and that's exactly, you know, what I did. The mistake I made in going back, you know, and again, little did I know that you know, he was preparing me. I think God was working through him to prepare me for this battle that was coming. And the very day that we returned would be the very day that I engaged in my first battle against these demonic forces. And it was after my mom had been picked up by an unseen force and hurled through the air across her room, landing into her makeup table. And again, she was cut and scratched and bruised. And something inside of me had just snapped. You know, and also in that point in time, the priest was bringing mason jars full of holy water to the house. And I recall grabbing a Bible and a jar of that holy water, and I just began to pray, and I was shouting out, you know, in the name of Jesus, I command you to show yourselves. Now, that was my mistake, because what I should have been saying was, in the name of Jesus, I bind you and I cast you out. I command you to depart. That's what I should have been saying, but I was saying, you know, show yourselves. And as I was saying this, that it was like a scene from a horror movie. You know, the house started vibrating. Things were falling off the walls, and again, I was 13, and there were five adults with me, and they were terrified, and I should have been terrified as well, but I think I was just enraged. I know God was working through me on that day, but I was absolutely enraged. I was just so sick of all of it, and just so tired. You know, when a person takes so much, and they just builds up, and then their back is against the wall, and they just snap, and that's exactly, you know, what happened.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the demons, they feed off of all that anxiety, all that anger.
Absolutely. Now, all the negative emotions, and that's why it's a large part of my message as well, to empower people and to get them to change the oil in themselves, so to speak. You know, you have to replace all that negative garbage with God's good, positive energy and just all good things and positive things. And that's how we keep the enemy away from us, by just filling ourselves with good and positive things and keeping all that garbage away from us. Because you're exactly right. When we're living in the negative, it does empower the evil influence. Mm-hmm. And at one point, you know, while asking, or not asking, demanding these things to show themselves, they actually did appear several feet in front of me in the living room in greenish, yellowish beams of light. And I'll never forget it. I mean, saw them very clearly, as did the adults, for several seconds. And one, we call it the Undertaker, had the black hair, black beard, black suit, chalky white skin, black eyes, very sinister looking thing. And another entity was another male that had curly hair, like red, close crop curly hair, scar down the side, but it was the left side of his face, chalky white skin, black eyes. These two entities in particular were assaulting my mother on a regular basis. And then another entity was a female, very sharp facial features, long dark hair, black gown. And then the last entity was the dark force entity. It was just a dark form, you know, a hooded dark form with glowing red eyes. And we saw them clearly for several seconds, and then they just dissipated. They didn't just suddenly vanish. They dissipated. And as they were dissipating, all the chaotic things that were happening in the house had suddenly stopped, and we ended up leaving. And at that point in time, my mother had another man in her life by the name of Richard. Richard, very much like my dad, man's man, very tough individual, former boxer, not afraid of, you know, anyone or anything. However, was terrified to be in the house, and he was physically attacked on many occasions, you know, while being in the house. And it was only his love for my mother that kept him around. So we ended up leaving, you know, after that, going to his house for the night. And so that was that might have been a battle won, but the war certainly was far from being over. Mm-hmm. And my mom suffered really up until the time of her untimely death, which was, you know, again, occurred months after moving out of the house. And within 2 months and 2 days of her mother passing tragically first, and, you know, these were the two most important people in my life, and they were the two closest people to me in my life, and they were suddenly gone. And I just, you know, that was just a finisher for me, in the sense that, you know, I was already just living in darkness, but had some hope now, since my uncle had talked with me and I felt empowered. But yet, after they passed in such a sudden way, you know, again, I just absolutely didn't care about anything, and I wanted to die. I was trying to find ways to die. I wasn't suicidal in a sense, but I was welcoming death, and I was living on the edge, and I absolutely was seeking death, and God had another plan for me.
Yeah.
Now, you even, from according to the book, you know, that day when you came home from, you know, your dad's in Florida, you reached out to your uncle, you know, while everything was going on. I think you said,
yeah,
or the phone or whatever, you know. So he was,
that's
like,
exactly,
you know,
right,
really strong for you also.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I believe God was working through him to plant these seeds of faith, and everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I certainly wish I could go back and change these things, but I can't. So all I can do now is move forward, try to be the best that I can be, and try and be a shining example to others, that they can see, hey, look, God brought this guy out of these horrific things. And again, my life is very blessed now, and I'm so thankful to God for it. So I really hope that people take this to heart and say, hey, there, you know, wow, you know, there is hope, and we can get through these things, and there is a way out, and we just have to keep fighting. You know, I tell people, if we get knocked down 1,000 times, we have to get back up 1,001.
Yeah, well, with that being said, I mean, I could sit here and we could have a 7-hour show with you. I mean, you, with that being said, you are working on a movie. I feel you had emailed and said that you were working with some people to make a movie about,
yeah,
your story.
And that's amazing in itself, because 2 years ago I signed a movie option, and I signed with the people that made The Haunting in Connecticut, and actually it was 3 years ago, and they kept me under contract for 2 years, and nothing materialized with it, and I was disheartened by it. And yet, I just gave it to God, and I knew that if it was His will, then something else would come along. And very strange, because I parted ways with that company August 2011. We had decided to go our separate ways, and I got my rights back. And then, just up until, I want to say 3 months ago, nothing was happening, you know, as far as anyone contacting me about a movie or anything like that. And then I got contacted by the very same company saying, would you consider re-signing with us? And I was very much considering it. And yet, God, I felt an inner urging that it wasn't right. I shouldn't be doing it right now. I should wait. So I waited, and sure enough, this other company came along, and 35mm Pictures, great people. Dale Lames, he's the CEO of the company and the producer. Great, great guy. I just knew it from our initial correspondence, and then we talked on the phone. You just know when something's right. And it's just everything has just fallen into place. It clicked, and yes, they have the script written. They have the screenplay written, and they are securing the financing now, which we fully expect that to be in place within the next couple of weeks. And then we are scheduled to begin filming in January of 2013. So we're looking at probably mid-January.
You're busy. You have the movie. You have your new book coming out.
Yeah.
And every little bit, amazing. You know, it really is. It just helps to keep getting that word out and that message out. Because then when it reaches that one person who maybe then isn't afraid to come forward and seek help for the problems that they're having. And the irony is that that area of Maryland seems so active even back when you were a child, that if more neighbors had talked amongst themselves and said, this is going on in my life, you may have been able to find solace with some of your neighbors or find help back then. So, you know, these are all new options and new avenues of reaching out
absolutely.
To people that are coming through the work that you're doing.
Yeah,
again, it's miraculous. It really is. It's miraculous. God does work miracles. We're seeing it here, and I thank Him for it. And we're going to have a thing at the end of the movie, which I think is going to be certainly something different than what you would see in the normal, supernatural type of movie, is that we're going to have a listing at the end of the movie in the credits for people who need help. Either they can contact me or other people. So we're really going to have something to offer to people who may be watching that, who may be going through a similar thing.
That's great. And I told our Dave Giuliano, I told him, I said, they don't have a cast yet. And, you know, despite Dave's one person shortness from you, I said he should, go out there and try to be you for the movie.
That's right. You never know. You never know. And again, we've got everything pretty much in place, and the last thing that they'll have to do is the casting. They haven't started that yet, but they plan on doing that probably within the next few weeks. And that's really it. They already have the location set. It's just amazing how fast everything came together.
Phil, is there a name yet?
It's going to be called Dark Force.
It is?
Dark Force movie.
That's great.
And do you have Facebook, and you want to kind of plug your book in your movie?
Oh, absolutely. For anyone who would like to contact me, please visit www.philbean.net or philbean104.com. That's my two main sites. I have all my social media off of those sites. We have a Dark Force the Movie website getting ready to be launched very soon. We have a Dark Force the Movie Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff as well. Pinterest, it's all going to be launched very soon. And also for anyone out there who would like to order copies of my books, Dark Force and Delivered, same thing, please visit philbean.net. And I sign every single copy, and I'm just grateful to everybody for, taking the time to listen to my story and for purchasing my books. And I just, I'm grateful to God that I'm in a position to make a positive difference in others' lives now.
And I thank you so much being so busy and giving us an hour of your time.
Oh, this was a quick hour, and I want to thank all of you guys. God bless you and your families, and I look forward to coming back and maybe the next time.
Yes, I was going to say.
You can have me back with some of the people from 35mm Pictures and let them, talk a little bit about it as well.
Definitely. I was going to say, I'll have to hook up with you and, after the new year and stuff like that, and maybe set up another date with you to come on, and you can bring your, 35mm on. And, it would be great.
Absolutely. Well, I thank you guys so much, and I look forward to coming back on soon.
Yeah, Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Bill.
Sharing all that information. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, oh, my pleasure, guys.
God bless. And yeah, we'll see you in Gettysburg, March.